Skipper celebrates. Every show is a celebration. Richard Skipper celebrates the best in entertainment. Each show, Richard delivers the artists you love, showcasing what makes them unique, never gossipy. The antidote to a sometimes hectic world. Now, here's your host, Richard Skipper.
Happy Sunday, everyone. And welcome to a very special edition of Richard Skipper Celebrates. For those of you who are here for the first time, welcome. My show is all about celebrating. It's about celebrating life, celebrating art, celebrating artists, celebrating whatever we can find to celebrate. And in these sometimes dark days these days, we need to find something to celebrate wherever we are. And I am so excited today to be celebrating one of my favorite actresses. I'm so excited. I'm going to bring her on screen right away. Kathleen Nolan had a birthday just a few weeks ago. And on her birthday, I reached out to her son, Spencer Garrett, who I love very much. And I reached out and I said, Spencer, I want to wish your mom a happy birthday. And he said, why don't you call her yourself? Which I did. And he said, I said, I would love to have her on my show. And he said, Richard, I think she would love that. And here we are. Kathleen, how are you?
I'm pretty good.
It's so good to see you again. And I want to ask you, in the midst of this crazy world, we have to find things to celebrate every day. And I want to ask you, what are you celebrating today?
I'm celebrating life. I'm celebrating it all. You know, we're in a very dark period here in our country. It's confusing, but we have to, those of us that are visible have to speak out and speak up. And it's really a good life.
It is. I'm sorry, go ahead.
I said we have to make it that way.
Well, I want to tell you about a very interesting synchronistic thing that happened yesterday. I reached out to a friend of mine who I also want to have on this platform to tell her that I'd love to have her sitting in this seat. And I told her that I hoped that she would tune in today, that you were going to be on the show. And she said, oh, my God, I'm watching Kathleen right now on Gunsmoke. So I ran to the TV and there you were on Gunsmoke. And as I was watching you again, I came to the realization, I grew up watching you as Kate on The Real McCoys. And once again, I was reminded of what an absolute incredible actress you are. So I want to thank you for those gifts that you've given to the world. And I reached out to a friend of mine, my dear friend, Leo Rodriguez. And I asked him if he would put together a little celebration of some of your film work. And he's put something together. And I'm going to share this with our viewers right now. And we can watch it together. And here it is.
Producer Showcase presents Richard Halliday's and Edwin Lester's production, Harry Martin as Peter Pan.
Names, Wendy, Mara, Angela, Darna.
There's my wife, Kate.
We just got married before leaving home. Carry me into the house.
You got yourself a Charlie horse?
The Real McCoys. They think he may take this McCoy.
From West Virginia, they came to stay in sunny California. Grandpappy Amos and the girls and the boys of the family known as the Real McCoys.
There's...
job I ever saw.
This is most unusual.
Oh, my, what a lovely garden you have out there. Would you be a darling and show it to me?
Well, sure. Come on, man.
Lieutenant Morgan reporting as ordered, sir.
The boat, Trotter. Inform complete. We are returning the ladies on the first available plane.
Oh, well, I'm afraid you can't do that, sir.
Oh, can't I? Well, I happen to have three stripes on my shoulder that says I can do anything I want to on this island, see? Count them three.
Well, I'm not questioning your mathematics, sir, but there's a man back in the Pentagon. He's got four of those stripes, and our orders came directly from him, sir. Admiral Bronson, this is a great pleasure, sir.
We'll see about that, Lieutenant.
I assume you're all ready for inspection, Lieutenant?
Oh, as ready as we'll ever be, sir.
Right. Now, I want the truth. If you don't tell me why you're really here, I'll let them in.
No, no, don't be doing that.
You tell me the truth?
Yes, yes, sir. Don't let them in. So now you know.
Kathleen Nolan, our first Screen Actors Guild president, female. I can't say enough about her because of what she helped us with in our lives. No other women had done that. And then with Kathleen, the greatest gift that she gave us, and it's been never given by any other president, the greatest gift was that she said to us as stunt women, "My door is always open to you. Always." No other president has said that.
Thank you, and thank you for all the gifts that you've done over the years. I want to go back, you know, to the very beginning. I mean, my image here is a little blurry today. It's because of the broadband and Mercury retrograde and everything. So I'm a little...
I don't know anything about that, Richard.
So we're just going to talk and we're going to celebrate you. But I want to ask you, first of all, you grew up on a showboat.
That's right, the Goldenrod.
Tell us a little bit about your parents. I know that your father was an actor and your mother also. Tell us about your earliest
sister.
And your sister.
The four of us.
And what are some of your earliest memories growing up and performing on the showboat?
Well, I was first brought on. I did my first show. I was 1 month older than a year. I was 13 months old. And that was my first appearance on the Goldenrod. And then I worked there for many, many years, all through school, all through high school. And my father was most often the leading man. And my father played opposite my mother. And then he played opposite my sister. Mm. And then he played opposite me. Because you guys don't get older. They leave that for the ladies. We have to change.
But what was it about the business itself, Kathleen, that that you wanted to stay in the business. I mean, obviously that bug was there from the very beginning, but some people will leave the business. You decided that you wanted to stay in the business. What was it about this business that you wanted to make this your life's work?
I think it possibly was because I really never thought about doing anything else. I mean, it was just a question of getting through school so I could get on with it. And I got on a Greyhound bus at 17 years old and headed for New York and the Neighborhood Playhouse. So, but I had no doubt. I worked for a long time before leaving St. Louis to save the money to go to the Playhouse. And obviously another member of the family came with me. My father came and helped me find an apartment. And it was not a question of not doing it.
Mm-hmm. So it was obviously in your genes. You came to New York, and one of your, for lack of, you were working, and this is what I've read in your bio and everything, that you were working at the Palace Theater.
Yes.
When Judy Garland was performing there.
That's right. I was an usherette. And if you could, 5 cents an hour.
And if you can tell us a little bit about that, because I was reading that Judy Garland had a little bit of her Judy magic, if you will, that got you seen for the audition for Peter Pan.
Well, I performed, talk about, you know, being a very cheeky young lady. I was an usherette, and Judy wanted to see what she looked like from the third balcony. And I proceeded to do her entire act at 17. And then we became fast friends and were for many years.
And if you can tell us a little bit about what you recall from your audition for Peter Pan.
I auditioned 17 times.
Wow.
I mean, they kept trying to find the right person, the right Wendy for her. And they kept calling me back. And finally, I was the Wendy. But it was not an overnight audition and you get it. It was pursued.
So, Kathleen, when you did Peter Pan, there was another actress in the show who played Tiger Lily, Sandra Lee.
Sandra Lee.
And she's here. She's here to surprise you.
Hello. I don't know how I'm on this. I'll tell you the truth. I have no idea. My neighbor. I can't believe it. She was the original Wendy. And didn't we room together? I think room together in San Francisco. And there was linoleum on the floor. Yeah. Hello, cutie pie.
Hello.
How long has it been since we've seen each other?
Oh, it's been a long time.
About 40 years. Something like that.
Yeah.
Now,
I'm so overwhelmed because... I mean, we spent a great deal of time together. We're both very young and overwhelmed. I mean, so was Jerry Robbins, because he wasn't a well-known director at that time, right?
He was a ballet teacher, a ballet entrepreneur. Yeah. He was, you know, I think was Peter Pan his first.
His first show as a director and choreographer.
He did all right after that.
I think the kid will do okay. And I don't know how I got here. I'm telling you that I had, I don't know, need a Foxfire or something like this. I mean, I'm not good. Are you very good at this?
No.
Me neither. I'm telling you. But
you look a couple of times, but I've always been frightened to do this.
Well, Kathleen has a son who helped her get here.
My son is Spencer Garrett, and I wish you could meet him at some point. Sandra, I mean, well, Richard, you just talked to him, haven't you?
Yes, that's right. That's right. That's right.
Yeah.
So I mean, I'm
so lucky. I got the best. I have the best son.
So I want to ask you both. I know, Kathleen, that you were very much involved in the early days of early television. Sandra, had you done television before the first broadcast?
Before Peter Pan? I had, but they were odd. It was a channel. I don't even know if it still exists, but it was early channel. And as a matter of fact, they used to test it because they were beginning to fool with color. Mm-hmm. And for some reason, my coloring was very usable. But basically, I didn't know what in God's name I was doing then. In fact, I'm not quite sure I still know. But I mean, we both sort of wandered into other lives of great prominence. And you look exactly the same.
I think we both look the same.
Are you still up on Upper West Side?
Yeah, sure. And we tried to reach each other at one point, but yeah. I think you were living in a penthouse apartment or something.
Yeah.
And I live in a penthouse apartment or something.
Yeah,
but I don't know where you. And then you became like. I mean, a big deal with Screen Actors Guild. I thought, what the hell is she doing with that? I mean, because we were so young, I had no idea that either of us had a set of brains that we could use at that time. But there you are. It was something that you changed an industry. You did, because you found out that you were being, I hope this is it's true, you were being screwed in some way, and so you questioned it, and look what happened. You ended up being president of SAG or something like that. That's amazing.
I had my strike button on before I came on camera for the IA strike.
I was so excited when Skipper said to me, Richard said to me, you know, I wonder if you can speak to someone. And I said, he said, Kathy Nolan. And there was a beat that went by. And and then history went by. And I thought, Peter Pan. And she was the first Wendy. And none of us knew what the hell we were really doing at that time, including Jerry, may I say, you know, and we should and will be friends forever.
That's wonderful.
You know, really.
That's absolutely wonderful. Well, Sandra, I want to thank you so much for stopping by.
Before, Richard.
I think you have a lot.
You're really showing me the ropes.
Anyway, I hope maybe Richard or you will give me your address and we'll pick up again. Because I love you.
Good.
And I'm going to say goodbye and wonder how I got here if it wasn't for my neighbors.
I pull those strings and I'm going to put you in touch with each other, okay?
Okay, thank you. And
thank you. I love you, Sandra. And I'm going to be in
touch
with
you. I love you. Okay, and I love
thank
you.
You. Thank
Goodbye.
You so much.
Goodbye.
Thank you so much. Thank
I'm
you.
I'm not sure how to do this, though.
I will take care of it.
I'm going to try.
Don't worry about it. Thank you so much. What a surprise that she stopped by. So how long were you with Peter Pan? And I know that you did the two television productions that were also done, the first two.
Yeah. We did it twice on television. And we had a pretty good long run at the Winter Garden. Yeah, it was a good part of my life.
And then, I mean, you also were very well known for your stint on The Real McCoys and your memories of doing that and doing early television and Emmy nominations and that time in your life. Your memories of that as well.
Well, you know, it just doing early television in New York, and because it was all live.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I talk to my son about it sometimes because it's, you know, they're not as used to, you know, doing live television anymore. And it was a treat for all of us. But we were all kind of, we went from office to office, you know, doing auditions. And it was a very good time. I think it was a good time for television. Live television was very important.
Well, Kathleen, you also, I want to ask you, you studied with Sanford Meisner, and you also have taught. There was a time when we had three networks, and those three networks obviously vied for the largest demographic, and obviously trying to vie for the largest demographic. They were trying to vie for those from my generation, my parents' generation, my grandparents' generation. And I feel personally, my own opinion, that the quality was much higher across the board. And now there are much more channels. And it's just like, trying to vie for so much right now. Why do you think, in your opinion, that that era of live television is not succeeding in today's world?
I think the world is much more complicated now, and they have the ability to send up rays, whatever they do, and to get it all over the world. I mean, in the early time in New York, when we were doing live television, you went from Studio One to Playhouse 90. You know, it was a very important time. I think you may be right. I think in my memory, I get confused with 47 channels.
Yes, I do too.
I did three series. I did a live series in New York before Peter Pan.
Mm-hmm.
I did a series with Brandon DeWilda called Jamie, a live television on ABC. I've been stuck on ABC. I did three series on ABC. You know, Broadside, I did Broadside. That was on ABC. And then, of course, The Real McCoys for 6 years. So I can't, you know, my son's doing a show on HBO. And now there's HBO Max and there's, you know, 47 Max and 36 Turn. I can't find him, you know.
And then there's all the streaming that's coming up.
Yeah.
And
that's what I mean, you know, and I want, if I want to see my son, he has to set it up for me.
Well, God bless him, and God bless, you know, the fact that, you know, it keeps going, and it's going, and it's going to keep going. I want to talk a little bit about your activism, and the fact that you, very early on, and God bless you, the first female president of the Screen Actors Guild. I want to talk about the road that led to that, and the changes, as Sandra just pointed out, that you were able to bring to the industry. So first of all, was this something that you pursued, or did it pursue you?
I think it's probably a combination. I've been an advocate, I think, my whole life. You know, I asked for my first raise at 6 or 7 years old. When I was working on the Showboat, and I managed to get a raise for everybody. Mm-hmm. So I guess that was the beginning of me, you know, making a challenge to management, you know, mm-hmm. on behalf of more than myself.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it's just, I still do it. You know, we have possibly a strike coming up now. I hope not. I hope it doesn't happen, but I'll be out there marching with them.
God bless you. That's wonderful. You know, I agree with you. I hope that it doesn't happen, but I totally think that this may be a necessary strike.
I think so. It's because, as Spencer explained to me, because he's doing an HBO show, and it's the hours are just extraordinary. And, you know, actors and directors, above the line, as they're called,
mm-hmm.
Well, if they're not working for 3 hours, they have a dressing room to go to. They're, you know, there are all kinds of accommodations, but the crews are just so overworked. So I guess you understand that the strike is more about working conditions. And I mean, that's what it's called, wages and working conditions.
Absolutely.
That we fight for. So it's everybody makes a lot of money. Well, everybody doesn't make a lot of money. And I think it's very important for people to understand that these are, you know, these are all working people, you know, And we can't allow them to fall asleep on the freeway trying to get home.
That's absolutely true.
Because they're so tired. You know, it's just, it's not an appropriate way to do work. So, and I know that it affects, you know, I have a son that's an activist now. So, and he sees what's going on because he's currently in a series. Mm-hmm. So he knows how hard they work. And, you know, they're here from the crack of dawn to midnight at night. And I think we need to look at some changes. And there I am spouting.
No, and I'm glad that you're spouting. And these crews are there hours before the actors show up.
And hours after.
And hours afterwards. But I want to go back again to that time frame. Again, you were the first. So if you can take us back to that world, and was it a difficult transition for you to come in as the first female president of the Screen Actors Guild? And what was the, was there any opposition to you? Like I
had five men ran against me.
What was that?
I had five male actors ran against me. I got more votes than all five of them combined. So I think the time was right. But I think it was just an accumulation of a lifetime of seeing what's around me and what was right and what was not right.
What
was even in live television, you know, it got to the point where the crews in that time, too, were putting in so many hours. So it's just a combination. I've been interested in, I guess, equality mm-hmm. at the time I was a little kid. So I just, you know, I think it was a natural progression. And it was a period of time when we were, the guilds were really changing. Mm-hmm. Like the Screen Actors Guild was always a superstar. Mm-hmm. And 99, well, all of them before me were all males. All well-known, very well-meaning, but it came a time where we needed more internal work in the guilds, not just a figurehead. You know, they're all well-meaning, but they were not. Here's Spencer's giving me my button.
Good for you. And thank you, Spencer. Was there a particular impetus for you to run at that time? Was there a specific cause that you were running on?
Well, it was more roles for women. It was more participation for everybody, you know, not just because there were a lot of deals that were made that I thought were not appropriate, you know, when Ronald Reagan was president and then he made a deal on the television show that he was doing. And that's kind of started examination of what kind of relationships a major star has to those that he's working for, but not always just who's working with, like the other actors. So it's been a major change over the years. And I guess I was part of that beginning.
And there were also changes. I mean, Marge Champion was a dear, dear friend of mine. And she was telling me that when he was
the terrific lady.
What was that?
I said, she's a terrific lady.
Yes, she was. And
I only got to meet her twice.
Well, she said that she also, when he was the president of Screen Actors Guild, he made some deals that unfortunately affected actors being able to get residuals for a lot of the shows, like TCM with movies and everything. The actors are not getting residuals for these shows. And it's a huge, huge shame. The business obviously has changed a lot since the early days of television. What are some of the changes that you have seen over the course of your life and career that you think are for the betterment, and some of the things that you still feel that we have a long way to go?
Well, I do think we have a long way to go. And I think part of us having a long way to go is the extraordinary changes that we've seen over the years. I mean, when you're talking about people representing, like on television, three channels and seven studios. So there's a different kind of negotiation over the past, you know, 15, 20 more years. It's just gotten, I think, more democratic in a lot of ways. I don't think it was always the intention early on. A superstar was always elected, but it wasn't really like a campaign. It wasn't an election. It was like they were all male and all good. A lot of them were still good friends of mine. But there was just a whole change in the industry from live television. You know, live television, even after they were just talking about film, you know, everybody was scrambling about which union are you supposed to be working for? Because there was AFTRA and the Screen Actors Guild. Some things were Screen Actors Guild. You know, it was a time of change. So I was very much a part of that for a lot of years.
Now, I want to talk about some of the people in your life, and I want to talk about some of the life lessons that you learn from these people. You know, like Sanford Meisner, I want to talk about the life lessons that you learned from him, both as a mentor and lessons that you learned as an actress and as a human being.
Well, I'll tell you, I could start out by telling you a very funny story.
I'd love that.
I went to the neighborhood playhouse, and then I started working. And so I went into his professional class. And I was going back and forth from California to New York, and I lived a couple blocks away from the neighborhood playhouse. And I had been working in Hollywood, and I came back, and I came back to class. And I did this whole elaborate thing. I was doing The Mother in A Taste of Honey, a character woman. But she's very fussy with boas and makeup and all of this kind of thing. And it was the first reading with this young woman. And I was like overprepared. You know, I knew exactly what the ending was. And he turned to me and he said, after me being in Hollywood and away from him, he said, "You don't have to have it by 8 o'clock tomorrow morning." You know, I had already put everything together. And yeah, we were very good friends until, you know, I went to Bequi. Mm-hmm. He had a place in the island of Bequi. And I went. And then my son went also. He took a small group of young actors there. We did a thing when he was on PBS, when they did a tribute to him. And he wanted a lot of the people that are my age, like, well, you know, people like Barbara Baxley and a number of good male actors. And we tried to talk him into taking us to Bequi. He said, "No, you're too much trouble. You all make too much trouble." So he did decide then to take a group of young actors. And fortunately, my son got to be one of them. And then he did. So then on the next year, I went as his assistant for about 6 or 8 weeks. So, I mean, I guess I learned patience. I learned not having to have it by 8 o'clock tomorrow morning, by working it through, knowing exactly what your intention is and so forth. He was magic in my life for always.
Now, speaking of magic, I want to go back to Peter Pan for a moment. You said 17 auditions for a young actress in the theater is daunting. What got you through all that? Determination, belief in yourself? What
kept you going? A big aqua skirt. A big aqua skirt that twirled because I wasn't a good dancer. So I wore the same skirt every time they gave me steps to do so I could twirl around. And then Sandra Lee was a good help to me. You know, we were buddies very early on, but she'd been around the block.
Yes.
A little more. And so we came to Los Angeles. We started in Los Angeles. And then San Francisco. And actually, I, as I said, I'd already done a live series in New York with Brandon DeWilde called Jamie. And when we were, our out of town was Los Angeles and San Francisco. And they weren't satisfied with where it was going. And they brought in Betty Comden and Adolph Green and Julie Stein. Mm-hmm. And I was meant to go back to work on the series. And so I made had to make a big decision. I had to either give up the series and take a chance that it was going to do well when it got to Broadway. And so I'm a theater brat. So I took a chance and I gave up the series, and there we were at the Winter Garden Theater.
Well, you bring up a very interesting point, because most actors and actresses, there come forks in our lives and our careers where you have to make a decision. For you, being a theater brat, that decision may have come easily for you. But how do you, for the most part, make those decisions when you've got those forks in the road?
Very carefully. No, I think it's just you have a tendency to, if it's a project that you really think is worthwhile, but you don't know whether it's going to make it or not. But if it's something you believe in, you know, then you may give up something that makes more money. It's never been really about money, because I guess because I grew up in it, you know.
And, you know, and also sticking with Peter Pan for a moment, Jerome Robbins, working with him. What was that?
I said he was a killer.
Well, that's the rumor that's going around town. So,
well, you heard what Sandy said.
So what were some of, what was the experience like for you working for him again at such a young age in your career?
Well, you know, I because I'm not a dancer and was not a dancer, the one thing that I could not seem to fulfill for him was anything having to do with the dance, mm-hmm. and particularly the flying. He practically broke my foot trying to make me point my toes, mm-hmm. you know, going through the air. He was and it was very early for him, you know, to do a book show. You know, he was a ballet mm-hmm. dancer and fantastic. Peter Pan was his first book show where he had to follow along. And I think it was a lesson for him too, but they weren't quite sure. He wasn't quite sure. And that's why he kept bringing some of the same people back to audition. And that's why I said I had this aqua skirt. And it had a big squirrel in it. So when I had to do the dancing across the stage, I made it look like I was doing a lot more.
And you succeeded with that.
I did, yeah.
And again, Mary Martin, your lessons that you learned from her as an actress and as a human being.
Well, first of all, we were really very close and very fond of each other. I learned early on when we started rehearsal that there was, it was no snap to, we got it, let's go on. The long process and her patience with doing the process and making it work, even if it took hours and hours. I mean, she was a master, you know, she was a master artist, in my opinion.
And I want to ask about David Susskind. David Susskind was the one who brought you to early television, working with him as a producer and lessons learned from him as well.
Well, he was a taskmaster and they produced Jamie, but they also did things like Playhouse 90. And I did all those early shows and he really knew what he wanted. He had a good eye. Sometimes he was very difficult for artists to work with because there's, you know, more than a little interest in how much money it was going to make mm-hmm. all the time. And so I wasn't used to that so much because I was very fortunate. After the Neighborhood Playhouse, I got this television series, and it was David Susskind's company. And I had done a live show it was part of, I guess, part of early Playhouse, the Playhouse 90. And I played a young girl that was talking to a young boy sitting across in the tenement, across the way. And he couldn't speak. And I talked to him and sat in the windowsill. And many, many years later, I worked with him as a director. Wow. It was Leo Penn. And suddenly, many, many years later, I was doing a six-hour miniseries with him. And actors always light up when they remember something that they did together. So I've been fortunate, because from the early days in New York, we're all still doing it. We're all still around, you know.
That's wonderful. And I want to go back, you know, I'm going to respond to some of the comments that are here, asking about working with Walter Brennan, for example.
What was it like to work with him?
Yes.
Well, he was a taskmaster. He was always working at it, always prepared. Didn't much cotton to, you know, back in that period of time, we didn't have, there were no cell phones. You know, people sat around in director's chairs and talked to each other.
A nice thing. That's a nice change.
Yeah. Yeah. And so we became like, a few years ago, I spoke at Richard Crenna's memorial, the best actor I've ever worked with. And we talked about, you know, I talked about how we spent time together, how you, as you were sitting in the chairs, you knew what's going on in their private life, what's happening here, you know. He was going with this young woman, and then suddenly we get the announcement he's getting married. You know, I mean, it's just a process of being a family. And, you know, you didn't have cell phones and you didn't have dressing rooms, or we didn't have right outside the door. So you were on the set most of the time.
Kathleen, what made him the best actor that you worked with?
Listening. Really, really wanting to hear what the other actor is saying. I mean, you could see it. You could always see, you know, you could always tell. It wasn't, there was never, if you had two lines and he had 20, he was really interested in the two lines. You know, he was interested in the response. And you know, we just were always friends, you know.
He was an amazing actor who went easily from comedy to drama. Just
everything. Well, I wasn't aware, because I didn't watch that much early television, and I wasn't even aware of Our Miss Brooks. And then I got him to do the squeaky voice for me a couple of times, you know. But he was mostly in radio. And he did tell me a funny story one day. He said there was a review in the LA Times, and the critic said, "I listened to radio for the last 3 days, and there are 9 terrible performances of this young, of a young kid." And then Dick said, "And all 9 of them were me."
That's great.
Because radio, they did, you know, they did different shows and different voices. But he was, you know, he was just humble and good.
And your memories of working with Arnold Stang?
Was fun, you know. I don't think he was so used to being an actor in you know, in a collective way. I mean, he was more stand-up and so forth, you know, but he was fun, you know.
And
he had good people.
And Sheila James.
She's a councilwoman out here. Did you know that?
I did not know that. That's incredible.
Yes. I don't know. Spencer?
Yeah.
How long has Sheila James been?
I don't.
Sheila. Her real name is Sheila Kuehl.
Okay.
So she's been a supervisor. She's heavily into politics.
Now, you also have served as the LA City Council member. So, again, involved in politics. I've been warned not to go into politics with you. But I will say this.
No, they're not.
I will say this. You and I are on the same wavelength politically.
So you mean you're going to move to Ireland with us?
Yes. Huh? Yes. We're going to go together. Thank you. So,
What is that? Is that behind me? There's a thing behind you, a beautiful screen.
That's behind me.
Yeah, an orange, sort of orangey screen. It's yes, lovely.
Those are my curtains with my lights. My glittery lights.
Oh, I see. I can see now. I see behind your shoulder, there are lights there.
Yes. Those are my twinkle lights. So, now, the last film that you did was the last movie star with Burt Reynolds. And you and Burt Reynolds, I understand from Spencer, you were friends for many, many years.
Oh, yeah. You know, I went with Bob Fuller for many years. And when I came on the set for the movie with Burt, he said, I wish I could have had Fuller here for you. Sitting in a director's chair. And I said, don't you think Jennifer might object? She's married for about 20 years.
Yes.
But we're in touch, too. He lives in Texas now.
So, I want to talk a little bit about your favorite leading man.
My son.
Yes. You know how to take a cue. So let's talk a little bit about Spencer. When did he first come to you and tell you that he wanted to pursue a career as an actor?
I think he was like 16. I think the line I remember was, Mom, I really want to do what you do. He went to Duke at first because he was interested in being in the, like, to be a diplomat. He'd met so many all over the world. We made 8 years of trips together all over. Mm-hmm. As you can see, I stole the keys. Now you get this little slitty thing like this, but mm-hmm. then we had beautiful keys and he went with me and he met, for instance, when we were in France, the president of their union was a woman. And she said, next time, Spencer, I want you to be speaking French to me. And he worked on it and worked on it. And he had a teacher and at school. And then he had a teacher that came home. Like, I think she came once or twice a week so that the next year he could speak to her a little bit. Madame de Lalle, I think was her name. Yeah. Well, he's just amazing.
So you were, obviously, I mean, you have such a love for this business that there were no qualms about him going into this business himself.
No, not in the least, except that he had to be trained. He had to be qualified. He couldn't be, because, you know, he's a good looking man. They could be, you know, they can, you know, they can pick him up at 19 or 20. And then by the time they're 25, they don't know what they're doing. So, you know, the fact that he was willing to study and prepare himself, and he's really good.
No, he is an amazing actor. I hope.
But he's very versatile. He's not, you know. Fortunately, the business has changed so much that it's not like, you know, 77 Sunset Strip and, you know, whatever. I mean, he's doing, or right now he's playing Chick Hearn. Mm-hmm. And one of the women here, Liz Torres, mm-hmm. And she said to Spencer one day, "You're so gorgeous, you should be a leading man." And he said, "Character actors last longer."
Good. I want to ask you, looking back over the trajectory of your career, obviously in this business, I was talking to someone the other day who's had an amazing career. And he said, being in this business is like being in a pinball machine. You never know where it's going to take you.
No. Nope.
Have you, looking back, do you feel that you mapped out the career that you have? Looking at your career, was there a sense of true ambition, or do you feel that you've been lucky with the people that you've gotten to know along the way and the choices that you've made and the opportunities that have come your way? Where do you fit in with everything?
I think the choices that you make are very important, and the willingness to not go with something that may be more money, you know, or take you in another direction. I think I've always prided myself in being, you know, they call them character actors. I call them actors, you know. I mean, it's, you know, you should be, or it's much more fun to be able to do, you know. I was never kind of comfortable being like a leading lady, you know. I've done it. I've been that, you know. But no, when we did, it was called Dog Years originally, the film with Bert. Did you get to see it?
Oh my God! Yes, of course I saw it.
So they talked me into doing it, and from the time I got there, you know, we worked well together, and it was kind of an adventure, you know.
I mean, it's a great film. I will say this, from, you know, I'm an actor myself. It's a very painful film to watch, you know, for a lot of reasons. But it's a brilliant film. It's a very good film. I want to ask you, looking back again, I'm all about celebrating. I like to look back and celebrate. I'm going to ask a question, and I'm asking this question for all the actors that may be watching. If there was a difficult period in your career, I'm not talking about your personal life, career, that was difficult to get through, and what was the fortitude that got you through it? And how you were able to forge through that to keep going through this business, because it is a difficult business. And even in today's world, especially when the spotlight of social media shines a light on every single move that people are making.
It's always on.
It's always on. But in the difficult moments of your own career, what got you through those difficult moments?
I think faith, my own faith and faith in my own ability and, you know, my own commitment to this is my life. And it goes up and down and in and out, but it's what you choose to do, you know, and the fact that I never sold out. I could have been a pretty girl, you know, and it did a lot more work and a lot more films being the pretty ingenue, but I wasn't interested in that. So I think the versatility of my work is the thing I'm most comfortable with. And that's the thing that gets you through. It's looking for the next one, you know. But remember, I used to sit around in a cold water flat and drink Gallo out of a jug.
But I'm gonna end this where we started. Yesterday, thanks to my friend, I watched you on Gunsmoke. And
now, which one was that? I did three Gunsmokes.
This was where you played the widow, where your niece tried to get rid of. You were going to get married again. And there was so much power in your eyes, looking into this guy's eyes. And as I was watching these scenes with you yesterday, I said, wow, what a brilliant actress you are. And I've always been a fan of yours. excuse me, I'm getting choked up. So sitting here talking with you today has been a great honor for me. So, Spencer, do you want to come on for a moment or not?
Can you?
Two.
There's my little boy.
Yeah. So.
There we go.
Yeah. Can you say that? Yeah. Hey, Richard. So, Spencer,
you're wonderful, man. You really are. It's just really, this has been a treat. I've been watching from the other room, and you're just a delight.
I hope that you'll come and do this with me one day.
I'd love to. It'd be an honor.
So, in a moment, I'm going to ask you to leave. Okay. Because I'm going to leave as well. And Kathleen, I'm going to give you the screen to yourself because you deserve the screen to yourself. And I'm going to give you the final word. But before I do that, I want to thank everybody for being here today. I am such a fan of yours, Kathleen. Thank you for the gifts that you've given to the world and that you're going to continue to give through your body of worth. We can go and watch your television shows.
I haven't
She's still out there rocking it.
You're still there. We can still see what you're doing. So thank you for all that you're doing. Thank you for your activism. Thanks for being out there fighting for the rights of people on both sides of the camera. So thank you for that. Everyone who's here today, if this is your first time here, my hope is that you had a great time and that you will subscribe to Richard Skipper Celebrates. Not only are we celebrating Kathleen today, but I found out today there are 500 uploads here on this channel.
Wow.
Check them out.
I'm going to jump off and let you.
Yes.
Thanks, Richard.
Hit the like button, leave a comment, tell your friends, and, let's keep this going. I also end every show by telling everyone to go out and do something nice for somebody else without expecting anything in return. Go to your Facebook friends list and reach out to the first name that pops up and reach out with a phone call and tell that person what they mean to you. Not with an email, not with a text message, not with a private message, a phone call. And let that person know what they mean to you. Because as a dear friend of mine says, we're all in this together, but we're not in the same boat. And I always say, if you're going to go out in a boat, make sure you bring a skipper along. Kathleen, will you stay in touch with me?
Yes, of course.
We're going to stay in touch.
Okay.
So I'm going to leave the screen and I'm going to give you the final word. Anything that you want to say to everyone who's watching about anything that we talked about today that you want to build upon, anything that we didn't talk about that you wish we had, or just any message that you want to put out to anyone who's watching. And you don't have to worry about how to get off. When you say goodbye, I will end the show. So Thank you, Kathleen. You're the best.
Thank you.
Well,
I just say, care about other people. Not just care about yourself, but how what you do affects everybody else, not just here, not in the United States, but all over the world. And I think we have to learn to be kind to each other. It seems like we're going through a very difficult time in this country, and not just here, but all over the world. And I think a little more kindness could be useful to us, and a little more honesty. As an actor, the main thing you have is being honest. If you're not honest, as an actor, you're not doing it. Nothing's happening. So you can't do like this with life. You have to see it and live it and participate in it and try to make it better for not just for you, but for everybody. Bye, Richard.